And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this?
A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Visit DirecTV.com. Claim based on total games offered on national and regional sports networks with choice package or higher. Availability of RSNs varies by zip code and package. High-speed internet service required. Terms and restrictions apply.
Want an easy way to stay up to date with the latest news and trends in the NBA? Listen to the NBA Daily Ding podcast Monday through Friday. Wake up and turn up the NBA Daily Ding to stay informed on all things NBA here at The Athletic and wherever you get your podcasts.
With the playoffs in full swing, you don't want to miss a single episode of the Basket Buds edition of the Athletic NBA Show podcast on the Athletic Podcast Network every single Monday with myself, Zach Harper, and our cast of characters, Trevon Edwards, Jay King, Dave DeFore, James Edward III, Law Murray. We're breaking down every single big playoff story, and we're doing it with a lot of fun and a lot of trash talk. Make sure you're checking it out. The Basket Buds edition of the Athletic NBA Show every single Monday morning, right in your podcast face.
Hey everyone, this is Andrew Schlecht.
And I am Alex Spears.
And you can join us every Saturday on the Athletic NBA Show for the Saturday Slam and Jam.
We will bring you the most interesting plots and storylines from the playoffs, fun guests, and a weekly trivia show where I attempt to completely embarrass my co-host, Andrew.
So grab your coffee, do your chores, and turn up the Saturday Slam and Jam right here on the Athletic NBA Show.
Welcome to the Athletic NBA Show, Monday through Friday,
on the Athletic Podcast Network.
Coming up on today's show, we catch up on the playoffs and all of the news from this week, which just doesn't want to stop before any more news breaks.
This is Nerdish, You Wrote, with your host, Dave Dufour.
With Mo DeKeel.
Are you ready to be entertained?
And Seth Partnow.
Hello and welcome to the Athletic NBA Show. It's Friday. It's Nerdish, You Wrote. It's late at night, actually. We're recording this Thursday night after Bucks Nets. So we're all really fired up from the game. I'm Dave Dufour. Mo was just about to talk, but I cut him off. What's up, Mo?
It's not really late over here in LA. It's 8:20.
Oh, that's a good point. We're on Central Time over here. Seth, Central.
Also, we have to make a confession that we didn't actually start after the game. We started at the end of the game when it's over now, but yeah. We started.
They didn't need to know that, Seth. That's such a minute. Yeah. That's such an analytics little detail. Jeez, you're a nerd.
We started, all the pieces matter.
guys, we started in garbage time. You know, we didn't miss anything important.
And apparently we started with garbage time here too. So good job us.
Yeah, it's perfect. So how are you guys feeling about the Bucks and Nets now that it's going seven? You know, I didn't love the Bucks in game six. I really didn't see what I was hoping to see out of them. I was glad that they won, but
Well, no, but before we do this, Seth, do you remember when Dave picked the Bucks in five?
I can't keep track.
Yes, but hold on. But hang on. Listen, how am I supposed to predict that they would just play dumb for a couple games?
But you picked Bucks in five when everyone was healthy,
yes,
though.
I did. Yeah, Dante DiVincenzo wasn't hurt.
No. I know. We had a full Nets squad. Yeah. We're holding you accountable, Dave.
Listen, but it's okay.
That seems like a bad take.
Yeah.
Now,
oh, it's an awful take. And they've got,
I had Bucks in seven, so I feel great.
Yeah.
For all the wrong reasons and for everything I didn't expect to happen. Because, Dave, you're right. The Bucks have played this stupidly.
Yeah.
I had Nets in six before the series, which I feel good about where I was on that.
That's what it would have been, I think, if Kyrie hadn't gone out. I don't know, man. This Bucks team is just, it stays weird.
It's like, I figured tonight, like they were just so, they spent the whole first half playing bully ball. And whereas Brooklyn was at least able to, you know, put up some resistance to it in the first couple of games, it was just like they were heavy legged all game. And so like Giannis was just going to the basket, like Holiday was just putting people in the basket. They did that the entire first half. And then they come out of halftime and 11 of their first 13 shots in the second half are jumpers.
This is what they do. This is what they've been doing all series. And it's driving me freaking insane. Why go away from what works? And we're going to talk about this also when we get to the Sixers, because I got a lot of heat for them too. But it's going away from what you're doing that works. They did the same thing in game five. You know, you build this lead, you're moving the ball, you're getting good looks, you're getting good opportunities and things like that. And then in the second half, it's just all one-on-one stuff, you know, and it, you just touched on it. 11 of their first 13 shots in the second half are jumpers. Like, put your foot on their neck in the first 5 minutes of the third quarter and end the game.
Yeah. And, you know, one or two of those were kind of, you know, penetrate, kick, open three.
Sure.
Like, those are fine. Like, those aren't the ones we're talking about. Like, but it's, you know, Giannis takes a baseline pull up. Like, Holiday takes a couple step backs. Middleton, like, shoots a fadeaway. And, you know, that's for Middleton, I guess that's fine. But still, when you were at one point in the first half, they were like 13 of 15 in the paint. And it's just Do that. They have Blake Griffin as a rim protector.
Yeah.
Do that.
Why haven't they done – if they could have won in four, if they had just done that the whole time. You know, and then they go to Giannis at the five down the stretch, and hey, what do you know? It works. It's great.
I mean, it works when Brooklyn has no energy and, like, makes 2 of 9 threes throughout, like, the end of second and through the competitive parts of the fourth quarter.
Yeah. KD so, having to play 48 yeah. – and then yeah. come back after he 2 days. He had nothing.
I mean, he had seven turnovers tonight. He had trouble like hanging onto the ball against contact. And you know, this was I thought that, you know, Tucker got away with a lot in games 3 and 4 on him. I didn't feel that way tonight. There was not like a lot of KD's getting manhandled tonight. It's just like he doesn't.
No, it was solid defense on KD, yeah. I thought, from Tucker. And that's also why, like, the whole crowd of people screaming throughout the series after game five, why isn't Giannis guarding KD? It's like, no, dude, like, Tucker's done a good job.
Know your personnel. How about that? How about
Middleton did a good job. Yeah.
There was no you have three guys you could put on KD before you put Giannis there. And Giannis's best defensive role, to me, in my opinion, is the weak side cleanup guy. Is let me come over, help. Let me with his length and everything like that, let me come through and block shots and things like that. And I think
I've been told that you're actually a fraudulent defensive player of the year if you can't guard one-on-one on the perimeter.
Yeah. Yeah.
Anyway.
I mean, listen, Giannis can guard 1 through 5 on one possession, but you don't want Giannis guarding Kevin Durant on the wing. He's not a 2. He's not a 3. Like, it's a big versus a wing.
By the way, Giannis picked him up on some possessions, and if you want to go back and look at the possessions where KD got penetration, it was those when he was guarded by Giannis. Like,
yeah,
you know, KD is a
well.
KD
Giannis has some bad habits there Giannis too, is, right? So yeah, well, no, when he guards those big guys like KD, his handle is he's got a good handle, but it can get loose, and Giannis tries to pick it. And so you got to worry about getting in foul trouble if you put him on Kevin Durant. Not to mention just getting beat off the dribble.
Yeah, because I mean, because you say it's a little loose, but that's because KD's like one of his main moves is like that hang crossover into like a
he caught Giannis with one tonight.
Yeah, and Giannis's strength as a defense is not lateral quickness, and KD is a guy who will put you in a blunder. Yeah. So what are we doing here? Anyway.
But I'm with you guys, though. KD looked tired. He played 40 minutes tonight. Like, that's still a ton of minutes, you know, and going to be hard with game 7, you know, in 48 hours.
2 days, yeah.
If we do want to talk about something where, like, the thing where Brooklyn would have had a chance, it's the fact that they ended the second and third quarters so poorly. Mm-hmm. Like, they were down they gave up 6-0 runs at the end of both of those quarters, which is funny considering that they were down 11 entering the fourth quarter. Like, you take it, like, obviously you can't just, well, they, those possessions still happen. So you can't just, but you take away those 6-0 runs and they're actually up one at that point. But I think that, that's sort of indicative of them just not having a lot of burst tonight. And it wasn't, you know, it wasn't just Durant. It was like everyone didn't have a lot. Like, Joe Harris hasn't been shooting well, but he really struggled to even find shots tonight.
I mean, Jeff Green, 2-9, you know, like it's a lot of those guys that were big, you know, along those lines. I thought Harden looked a little bit better. Still not at the point where I'm like, oh, he looks fine. But just slightly better than what he looked like in game five. In that scenario,
he looked better enough to craft his way to, you know, some buckets.
It also helped that he was wearing the white jerseys because that looked a little more slimming. Sorry, that was just mean. That was fat shaming. Sorry, I apologize, James.
Black is slimming.
I don't know the difference.
So let me ask you, Mo. Do you feel like Brooklyn's rotation was just too? It's just too short. You know, I mean, they're playing like seven guys, really. And they don't have a lot of guys. That's part of it. But man, it just feels like they were running on empty. And Kevin Durant is playing 48 minutes. And, hey, that has to happen. And he's got to put up all 49 of those points to win that game the other night. But, man, you got to find a way to get these other guys going.
The only guy I really think on their bench that deserves more minutes is Nick Claxton. For him, he only got 3 minutes tonight, and it's just limited very much in terms of what they have. You know, this is where injuries in the playoffs really hurt you, because it's not just you don't have that guy. You're moving somebody up from your bench into the starting lineup, and now your bench is weaker, and so it becomes an issue. So I just think it's a tough scenario for Brooklyn to just have to deal with this, and like, crap, we just. I mean, like, Chris Chioza should get more minutes. Like, what are we doing?
I know.
No, and also, like, Claxton is the identity of the players who got hurt also really hurts Claxton because, you know, he's a very interesting pick and roll dive man, which you can't run a pick and roll Harden right now, and Kyrie's out. And like, you kind of don't want to run a lot of pick and rolls with Durant right now because that just brings a second guy to him.
And you're not getting as much dribble penetration. So Claxton and dunker spot doesn't really help you as much.
Right. And so maybe does he give you something defensively? Yeah. But like, basically that, you know, you have Claxton in the game, you can't run pick and roll. And then that lets Brook Lopez just, you know, stand at the top of the charge circle and like completely wall off the paint. So I don't, it's hard to say that they're making a huge mistake by not playing Claxton under these circumstances, other than the fact that maybe they just need the body.
It's just a matter of that. I think almost it's cause you're 100% right. Like, Harden can't move, so you can't do much on the pick and roll. Dave's right with him in the dunker spot. Not a lot of penetration and things like that. It's just like, if you need to spread out the minutes, just look at it. KD, 40 minutes tonight. Jeff Green, 36. Blake Griffin, 31. Joe Harris, 36. Harden with 40. And off the bench, Shamit with 22. Like, that's it. I mean, that's really all they got. And it's a body situation where it's like, look, for a few minutes, our offense might not be productive. Let's just hope he gives us something defensively. Like, that's
play a checking line. Like,
you're just like, please God, let's figure it out. You know?
Yeah. Well, how does the checking line work for Philly?
We're gonna get there.
Let's jump there in a second. Hold on, but I want to ask you guys about this game seven coming up because
no. Hold on. We got to do one thing about Milwaukee. Also, the one thing we got to talk about Milwaukee: no threes for Giannis tonight. Like, besides, I think his first pull-up shot, which absolutely drove me nuts. I didn't see a lot of pull-up Giannis too much, except maybe a little bit in that third quarter run. But no threes, no pull-up shots for him. That's good decisions. That's all I got there on that. You guys are both nodding your head, so I'm assuming we're good.
Not controversial.
No, I agree with you.
Not so controversial. You were awesome when you attacked the basket and tried to dunk. Hey, do that.
Yeah. So there's one thing that a friend of the program, Chris Herring, noted during the game was that there's a lot of times where he gets into the lane and he's not able to, you know, his Euro step didn't beat the guy and he like contorts his body and throws it back out.
Usually top of the key.
I think, yeah. And the thing I would like to see there is go into a crab dribble and okay, Blake has kind of chested me up. Okay, now I'm going to bang him, shoot a jump hook or spin off him and dunk. And instead of like idle down and do that.
Well, that's like young point guard stuff that you learn like when you're in middle school as a basketball player, because your natural instinct is to get into the paint and have that defense start to collapse and to do what? Pick up your dribble.
Kick.
Or yeah. Kick, right? It's one of the two, yeah. But you're picking that dribble up and looking to do something. And I just think it's the lack of experience.
Yeah. Like, but you think about that, like what, like in that situation, what would LeBron do? He'd get into the lane. Okay, you stop me. Mm-hmm. Pound, pound, pound. Either you're going to double or I'm going to shoot a 3-foot jump hook.
My one thing is, I think part of that is his free throw shooting is in his head. And at mm-hmm. that point, he's afraid to get fouled. You know, with how poorly he shot free throws. Did well today, 6 of 10. You're better than what he's been doing. But like I think some of that plays into that. With him, because you're 100% right. Listen, but I just think when you go like, what would LeBron do? I go like, yeah, well, LeBron's going to get fouled. Like LeBron knows he's getting in the line.
Listen, free throw routines. I'm sorry, but if you're like a 60% free throw shooter, you don't get one. They have got to get him to stop. Just get to the line and take the shot. Quit thinking. The more you dribble, the worse the shot is. And at this point, like the 10 second count, you can just see it on his face. Like you're not shutting that out. Man, you got to get that shot up. You got to just – Klay Thompson used to do it, actually. You know, like he used to do almost like a catch and shoot from the referee. And I say this every single time you have a guy like Giannis who is clearly in his head over these free throws. Man, just get the ball up. It's going to go in. It's going to go in probably 60% of the time, whether you spend all that time sitting there dribbling the ball and thinking or whether you don't. So just get the shot up and move on. That's my take on the Giannis free throw thing. Just got to get himself out of his head.
He's always taken a mm-hmm. long time on free throws.
Yeah.
This isn't
mechanical.
New. And even, you know, even earlier in his career when he shot him a little better, he took.
Yeah.
I mean, I think I remember, I want to say that he got called for a couple 10 seconds my first year with the Bucks when he was, you know, it was just his first kind of big scoring year. And part of it is because of the way he plays offense is so like physically demanding that there's also an element of, you know, this is me resting a little bit too. Yeah. So there is some of that, just kind of, you know, take the air out of the ball.
Take a 45 second timeout.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, they don't have 20, you know, they don't have the 45 second, 20 second timeouts anymore. So,
all right. Okay. Let's move to Philly, Atlanta. Shocking turn of events in that series.
Okay, Mo was annoyed by the Bucks series. I'm gonna get called a hater for this, and like that I'm down on the Hawks and whatever. Philly should have won the series.
Yes, no, absolutely.
They should have won Game 4, and they should have closed out the series last night. They are the better team, and they have given this. They have probably given this series away. And credit to the Hawks for being willing to take it and for keeping themselves in games and fighting. But they have no business being up in this series because they should have, they like with a more competent together team blows them out of the water in games 4 and 5 because they were reeling.
No, they, I'm with you, Seth. And they, whatever, call me a hater. I don't care. They have no business being up in this. And this is all the Sixers doing incredibly stupid stuff, plain and simple. Like, it's just when you look at what they did in game 5, Sixers offensively, what they did in the first half is exactly how you're supposed to play if you're the Philadelphia 76ers. And to go away from it in the second half, and I mean completely go away from it in the second half, is criminal. You can't be doing that. That stuff doesn't make sense. They went from 10 Embiid post-ups in the first half where he was dominant. Clint Capella has no answer for him. Every time they doubled, he made a great pass. Swing threes, opportunities, finding guys, doing a lot out of that. Second half, 3 post-ups, 1 in the fourth quarter with 2 minutes left, and he gets it with 5 seconds left on the shot clock. Now, listen, They got some good stuff. They got Seth Curry going and things like that. But you got to go stick. You're a post-up team. You got to be a post-up team. Can't change that in the second half.
I don't totally agree with you. I largely agree with you. I do think that they were getting for both Curry and Embiid for a lot of the second half. They were getting really good looks. And Embiid got, you know, he wasn't posting up, but he was getting inside when they kind of overreacted to Curry making a couple shots. And then Embiid came down the lane. And if you remember, like, there was a couple times where he had some pretty scary falls
every time he falls. Yeah. Scary falls, Seth.
Yeah.
Scary for John Collins, too.
Yeah, that was a crazy play.
He's hitting the floor all the time. Go ahead, Seth. Sorry.
No. So, that is a problem, and there's maybe some of an immediate. But the bigger problem, like for me, first of all, no other Sixer made a basket in the second half other than those two. That's a problem. Where they lost the game was the last minute of the third quarter and the first 2 minutes of the fourth quarter when they went to that bench lineup and Dwight clowned around and they went on and Atlanta went on a 13-2 run. And all of a sudden with 10 minutes left in the game, Embiid and Curry and Simmons have to come back in the game. And, you know, for the playoffs, Embiid has averaged 7.5 minutes in the fourth quarter. And shockingly, having come back in 2.5 minutes earlier than usual in the fourth quarter, he's out of gas at 2.5 minutes. And yes, we talked about this before, and I know you don't want to hear about, like, you know, him being tired. But at the same time, the bench has got to be able to give you 4 minutes in that spot without just, like, throwing up all over themselves.
I agree with you, but their problems, I think, started long before that. 8 turnovers in the third quarter is a massive problem right there. And a lot of it stemmed from Embiid in the high post and running the offense there. Not all the turnovers were on Embiid, but it all started with him initiating it. One was him with a dribble handoff and Korkmaz dribbles it off his leg. Trae Young gets a layup. One is him trying to get into the paint from the top of the key and it's a turnover and Bogdanović gets a layup. There are just mistakes. Like, here's the thing. Like, that's cool and I understand what they're doing. They're doing that to try to get Harris a post up, trying to get Simmons a post up. But, like, when that's not working, you got to go to your bread and butter, you know? And even, you know, we talked about it in our text chain. When you had to put Embiid back in, should have been 3 post ups in a row. Straight away going, like, it was like a 14-point lead when they put Embiid back in, should have been 3 post ups in a row. Let's see if we push this out to 20 because he's going to get fouled. He's going to get a bucket at least on 2 out of the 3.
How do you pull out? It's basically 25 point lead in 15 minutes, man. When you've got Joel Embiid.
No, it's, you know, like the great Lou Brown said, like, forget about the curveball, Ricky, give him the ear. Like, just like nothing fancy, just old number
great
one.
Great reference, by the way. Great freaking reference.
But it's surprising to me because, like, Doc, isn't that Doc's thing? Hey, I'm going to get out of your way. You go do what you do best.
This has been a weirdly coached series from Doc. The first game was terrible. He was better in the next two. I don't fault him for game four.
Hold on. Like, let's be more specific about what was bad.
That's a good point.
Game one.
Well, game one was the lineups for sure.
Yeah, right. Well, it was the lineups, and, like, I don't think starting with Danny Green
on Trae Young. Yeah,
because I don't think starting that way is a problem. Like, I think because, okay, we don't want to, like, play the card with Simmons. We want to do some other stuff. Simmons might pick up fouls, whatever. So if we can get away with this, let's see if that works. But it was clear 4 minutes into the game that wasn't going to play. And they kept at it for the entire first half and then went back to it in the second half. And so it wasn't like, okay, we'll try this. And then if it doesn't work, we'll get out of it because we have other options. They stuck with it way too long. And that was the problem in game one.
Yeah.
Not so much.
No, but there was also ended the first quarter with none of his 3 guys in. Right. And started the second that way. And it turned and it really kind of snowballed from there in that sense as well.
Wait, was Seth Curry not in the game then?
Oh, you mean, oh, sorry. You meant
Tobias Harris, who didn't show up at all for game 5, which is the other thing. He was great in game three for them and didn't show up at all in game five. But like, it's just the mistakes that they're making sometimes. It's just like, I don't even know. Some of it isn't coaching to me. Some of it is like, Embiid's got to demand the ball in the post too. I'm trying not to be Charles Barkley and Shaq on TNT or whatever.
But Embiid is good in the post. Yeah, he should.
No, but at a certain point, he's just got to look at Doc going like, just give me the ball on the block. Just call turn five, punch whatever you call it, and give it to me on the damn block. Let's go to work. And I'll get you and I'll take us home. But it was just it was impressive in that sense where I was just watching this thing. I tweeted at the end of the third quarter, I go, they're up 18, but no lead safe. You could just feel it coming. and it came.
Yeah. And the you know, it obviously for a big lead like that, some things have to happen. Like, you know, they're kind of banging around at 10, 12, 8, blah, blah, blah. And then felt like they'd kind of righted the ship. And then Collins banks in the three as the shot clock expires. But you can't go to pieces at that. And part of the reason why they didn't get any Embiid post-ups in the fourth quarter is because of the hack of Simmons. Yep. Which is, you know, Simmons has got to make his free throws, whatever. But they're going Hakka, and you've got Furkan Korkmaz and Seth Curry in the game. And they're just like, you know, maybe you get away with one of them. But that's you're giving too many targets. And, you know, Lou Williams and Trey went crazy. And it's like you're playing only defense. That's all you're doing is playing defense because Ben Simmons is shooting free throws. Like, you're playing set defense. Why do you have... Anyway,
yeah,
and this is and this goes back. It's funny because Fred Katz and I were talking about this. Like, this is something when he coached the Clippers that when it was Hack a DJ, and it's like, well, you've got Jamal Crawford on. Why do you have Jamal Crawford on the floor? Right. You're not you never have the ball, and it's
Simmons. The Hack a Simmons is work, or Hack a Ben, whatever we're calling it, is working. It's sapping his aggressiveness.
Well, yeah. He's afraid to go to the free throw line. I mean, it's just that simple. But it's here's the thing, and let's also we can't take everything away from the Hawks. The most impressive thing about the
Hawks
is, as a young team, they are mentally tougher than the Sixers. That's the way I look at this right now, and I have no faith in the Sixers winning the next two games because I think the Hawks are just that much tougher than them.
Yeah. No, well, it's like little things like Onyeka Okongwu, who hasn't been good all series, kicks Dwight Howard's ass for 5 minutes to get them basically to start the comeback.
Yeah, I mean, listen, the Sixers are going to be kicking themselves because they blew a chance to get to the conference finals and potentially the finals with
the path wide open in front of them because of all injuries.
It's unbelievable. Two times you blow a double digit lead in the second half. And I mean, it's unforgivable. Like, to be honest, even if they win the 7-game series, they don't deserve it.
All right. That's a lot of Sixers. I want to talk about Trae Young because we're hard on Trae Young, I think. And because he's talented. It's not because he's not good. Like, I think Trae Young is actually really good. He's been awesome in the playoffs.
Bold.
I know. Bold take. I really think he has been awesome in the playoffs, and it's pretty amazing to see a guy. I mean, like, we're seeing, like, we saw it with Luka, but Luka, it's just the experience that he has, it's hard to compare. But what Trey's doing at his size, I think, is it's like a modern Allen Iverson a little bit.
He has trimmed a lot of the fat. There are sometimes, like, there's, you know, we've talked about this before during the season. Like, there's a tendency for him to, I haven't shot in a while, so this is going up. There's a tendency for him to shoot get back shots when a guy scores on him. Like, if you ever watch, like, the Hawks play the Grizzlies, like, if Ja goes by him and like gets a dunk or something, it's going up. Mm-hmm. But he's just completely reined that in. For the, like, it's come out a couple times, and, you know, part of when it comes out is, like, that's frankly part of what got the Sixers the lead is, like, Seth Curry is hitting some shots, and then, but for the most part, he's just cut down on those kind of, like, possession light on fire plays.
Yeah, but, you know, the other thing, too, like, in this game, it's funny, I didn't even realize he had 39 points. And a lot of it's because he went to the line 19 times. You know, and the thing that he
can we
the thing he hasn't figured out yet in this series, and this is what's kind of funny about it, is he hasn't figured out Embiid at all in this series. Every time he comes in off a pick and roll and sees Embiid, he has no clue what to do. It's, I don't know if I get a floater off. I don't know if I can get the lob off. I don't, maybe if I wait and go really late and know Embiid's like, Embiid's done a great job on that, but he's done a great job of not just settling for threes himself. Like, okay, I'm going to get in the lane. I'm going to find opportunities. And he's done a great job on the probe dribble and finding opportunities out of that.
Yep. He's so, you mentioned that actually, like, if there's one thing that's been actually really impressive, it's Embiid has actually like guarded him on switches and moved his feet well. And then, I mean, that's an area where Trey's kind of size, like, actually, because it's like, okay, I beat you to the other side of the rim and I still can't shoot a reverse because I'll just eat the ball as it comes flying back to me. I did want to say that you mentioned the Trey free throws. It was a correct call. We got to get rid of
the Matisse Thybulle foul, right?
Like Thybulle had landed and was 3 feet in front of Trey. Now, the way the rule is written and enforced right now, it was an absolutely correct call. I'm not saying that. It's horrible. That should be an
offensive. No, you're that, right.
I'm not saying they should have called an offensive foul. I'm saying that that should be an offensive foul in the
future. Well, you know, the rules are wrong. This is the issue.
That's what I'm saying.
That's what I'm saying. And so, like, we look at the referees in trying to interpret these rules by the letter of the law, and that's why we hate the referees. Those rules are bad, man. And I think that the competition committee, honestly, needs to give the refs a little bit more, you know, leave it open to their interpretation. Guess what? Those referees understand the sport. Probably better than some of us.
Right. No, like that, like the foul on that foul on Thybulle is there's no landing space thing going on there.
It's
like,
it's,
you know, you can tell the difference between like a guy going up for a jump shot and I get my feet under you and me like Superman diving at you with the ball to try to, oh, my feet landed where he was.
No, we're 100% agreement on that. Jumping forward into the guy with no real intention of shooting, jumping to your side with no intentions of shooting. Got to get that the hell out of our game. And you're right. And it's the appropriate call now, but we need to get it out.
Save it for Smash Brothers.
And again, there's a difference between, like, you say jumping forward. There's a difference between jumping forward to shoot and guys, a lot of players, like, especially smaller players, like, they drift forward on their shot as part of, like, they sway. Like, again, the refs know the sport and can tell the difference.
You don't fall. I'm sorry, but you don't lay down on a lawn chair when you sway. And that's what jump shots in the NBA have turned into. These guys land on their heels. Right. Like, I mean, they are not taking jump shots anymore. They're just literally, honestly, they're trying to injure defensive players. If you want to extrapolate, what's going to happen? We're going to watch a guy really wreck an ankle or a leg, like in a severe way, landing on one of these idiots laying down on a jump shot.
Well, I mean,
it's awful to watch, man.
Yeah. And I'm with you. And that was a huge play.
Yeah. No, that's where they got
that
lead.
That was such a big play right there. I'm with you on that.
And to be clear, it was the right call.
Yeah, right.
We're not
interpretation killing the rule is correct.
This is our this is our future complaints.
And also, by the way, if you're an offensive player, you have to do it. If they're going to keep giving you free throws, wouldn't you? It's incentivized.
It's a smart play by Young. You know, we just got it. We got to take that out. We're all in agreement on that.
I'm the idiot for continue to get mad about it. Is what it is. With no change. We all get. I gotta just say, it's the sport now.
193 so playoff games for Karl Malone.
Important to get some easy baskets.
Donovan Mitchell.
And because Brooklyn is forced to.
Looking for an assist with your credit card, but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Play at the tempo they're playing. Because James only can go so far, right? And has only.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Play so much burst. You see the frustration on both guys. But listen, it's a possession ball game.
You know, if I would have applied myself, I could have gone to the NBA.
You think so?
Yeah, I think so. But it's just like, it's been done. You know, I didn't want to, I was like, I don't want to be a follower. Hi, I'm Jason Concepcion.
And I'm Shea Serrano. And we are back. We have a new podcast from Wondery. It's called Six Trophies.
Woo!
And it's the f***ing best.
Each week, Shea Serrano and I are combing through all the NBA storylines, finding the best, most interesting, most compelling stories, and then handing out six pop culture-themed trophies for six basketball-related activities.
Trophies like the Dominic Toretto, I Live My Life a Quarter Mile at a Time trophy, which is given to someone who made a short-term decision with no regard for future consequence.
Or the Christopher Nolan Tenet trophy, which is given to someone who did something that we didn't understand.
Catalina Wine Mixer trophy.
Ooh, the Lauryn Hill You Might Win Some But You Just Lost One trophy. And what's more, the NBA playoffs are here, so you want to make Six Trophies your go-to companion podcast through all the craziness. Follow Six Trophies on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. Listen ad-free right now by joining Wondery Plus.
Road in Brooklyn. Who do you trust more?
For the Clippers. You get this one kind of for a two possession game.
You know, if I would have applied myself, I could have gone to the NBA.
You think so?
Yeah, I think so. But it's just like, it's been done. You know, I didn't want to, I was like, I don't want to be a follower. Hi, I'm Jason Concepcion.
And I'm Shea Serrano. And we are back. We have a new podcast from Wondery. It's called Six Trophies.
Woo!
And it's the f***ing best.
Each week, Shea Serrano and I are combing through all the NBA storylines, finding the best, most interesting, most compelling stories, and then handing out six pop culture-themed trophies for six basketball-related activities.
Trophies like the Dominic Toretto, I Live My Life a Quarter Mile at a Time trophy, which is given to someone who made a short-term decision with no regard for future consequence.
Or the Christopher Nolan Tenet trophy, which is given to someone who did something that we didn't understand.
Catalina Wine Mixer trophy.
Ooh, the Lauryn Hill You Might Win Some But You Just Lost One trophy. And what's more, the NBA playoffs are here, so you want to make Six Trophies your go-to companion podcast through all the craziness. Follow Six Trophies on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. Listen ad-free right now by joining Wondery Plus.
Well, I like my chances if I'm in a possession ball game with Kevin Durant.
Yeah, it'll be him.
Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.
Okay, Clippers Jazz, guys.
I mean, you want to talk about...
I mean, listen, hey, well, Paul George is a good player, but I'll tell you, the Clippers pick and roll defense, it, with no Mike Conley out there for Utah, they don't need Kawhi.
Is Utah running a pick and roll?
They're trying. They tried. And now they may not have... By the way, for game six, they may not have Conley or Mitchell.
No, I mean, I think that... I mean, they're sort of running to spots like they're going to run a pick and roll, but they kind of it's my grandfather used to drink extra dry vodka martinis, and what he meant by extra dry was you take the cork out of the bottle of vermouth and wave it over the top, and that's how they're running pick and rolls. That's the pick and rolls they're running. It's like, yeah, you came up and run back. Okay, now I'm going to ISO and pull up. And that's so that like they're like you talk about a team getting away from their offense. Like this has happened a couple times in the playoffs and in the series is Utah, because they have great shooters, bangs some tough shots early. And then they like, you know what? We're going to take tough shots because we can make those shots instead of like, well, we made those. That's good. Now let's run our stuff.
Yeah, it's
and they just completely stop. And yeah, it's harder against the switching defense and blah, blah, blah. But you know what? Okay, they still have to play defense. If you run your stuff, make them guard after the switch. And they're just not doing it. They're just like, oh, shit, they switched. Let me back it up. I'm going to go. And so they end up with, you know, like 60% of Donovan Mitchell's shots this series, I think, have come with like 6 seconds or more of touch time.
Yeah.
And that's like, they're just, it's
devolving into hero ball, and you're going to play, you know, with, like, it's easier now with Kawhi, but it's a little bit like, you know, the Bucks trying to play hero ball against the Nets. Like, who's going to win that?
Yeah, no, it just kind of doesn't make sense. Like, they got 17 made threes in the first half, and they were from good offense for the most part, you know, and then stopped. And also, it should be, it's always a troubling sign. You make 17 made threes and only up five at halftime. It's you have problems on the other end. But just to look at how they got those shots, they got a lot of good looks out of that, you know, and drives and penetration. They got Jazz-like offense out of that. And it's like a theme of the playoffs, man. All right, second half. Throw out what worked. Let's try something that worked. Right, you know. It's just like, what are we – it didn't make sense. And I understand, like, Mitchell was jacking up shots. But it's like, look, if he's hurt, if he's really that impaired where he can't really do it, he's hurting the team and you got to get him off the court. Like, it's that simple. And he took a couple really bad ones, airballed one late down the stretch. Like, you can't be doing this.
There was one time they, like, the Clippers went on a little run. Jazz call a timeout. Coming out of the timeout, Mitchell dribbles straight down the middle of the floor and pulls up from 27 feet.
That's exactly what Quinn called it.
Yeah.
Like, no way.
Well, and it's an interesting, like, if you say, okay, Mitchell is hurt, okay, and that's maybe that's why he's doing this, right? He's trying to just get those jumpers up instead of working for better shots or whatever. It's an interesting comparison when you look at how James Harden, I mean, and of course, James Harden has Kevin Durant to carry the load, but the way James Harden has used himself as a decoy a lot on offense. He barely looks like he can move. I wonder if maybe you just got to get Donovan off the ball if he's playing in game six. Just, you know, put the ball in Joe Ingles' hands a little bit more. I don't know.
No, they've in the last two games, they've gotten good stuff when they go to the Ingles Gobert pick and roll. Like, Joe Ingles is a good, and also, like, okay, against the switching defense, a smaller guy gets on him. Joe Ingles is 6'9". And he can do, like, the slow-mo thing. Like, oh, I've got a small guy on me. Let me just amble here. And either they're going to bring help or I'm going to amble in and shoot this little layup.
Also,
and
fast release on that step back, too.
Yeah.
You know, over a shorter guy.
Yeah. And just, you know, go to that. Like, part of the reason why Utah's offense was so good all year is they had four guys who could run a good pick and roll. And okay, Conley's out. So,
but it shouldn't be their best pick and roll guys. It should be
no, but they're turning, like, they're basically they're because of it's this, like, flatten out hero ball. They are turning Bogdanovich and Ingles into stand in the corner guys, and they're both so much more than that. And somehow the guy who's in, like, the decision making spot, and Greg Anthony called this out really well on the broadcast last night. The decision making spot is Royce O'Neal. And the Clippers are ecstatic about
every time. And one thing we got to give Clippers credit to, though, is they've done a great job mixing up when they send the double teams to Mitchell.
Yeah.
They do it. Some possessions it's early. Some possessions it's in the middle of the action. Sometimes it's late. And it's never really like the same thing three times in a row. Like,
but
keeps him guessing.
Yeah. But they can do that and disguise it because O'Neal's guy can come and just stand on the nail.
Yeah.
And like, okay, Mitchell throws the quick pass back. He's not shooting that. He's not driving it. So it's just like, oh, he threw it back. Now we got to throw it back to Donovan. And then we just burned 8 seconds.
Yep. All right.
And you put Bogdanovich in that spot one time and see if they help. I dare you to help.
Do you want to take your victory lap, or do we want to take our victory lap, I should say, on Terrence Mann? That was a game changer for them, I think, for the Clippers. They needed that. Just weren't getting they weren't getting that sort of offensive energy from anybody.
He had moments where he was scared in the play. Like, there were offensive plays where he was scared. Like, he would get the ball and be like, nope, somebody else needs to get this. I'm not doing it right now. And then there were moments where he made sense. And it's so like and as a young guy, I understand all of that. So I'm okay with that. And it's great because they need – what you're right about is they need the energy. more than anything else. Like, he will penetrate into the paint. And I know we're lining up Seth here, ready to go here for a take. But like that was that was a big time play. You know, when he drove in and got himself a poster, you know, I thought it was ballsy. It was the dunk Morant wanted.
That's a great play, but you know how that, like, you know, we how much do we talk about when you see a defensive breakdown? It's very rarely the guy whose man scored. Yeah. Like, you go back and watch that play, and why did that play happen? Is because Donovan Mitchell Olayed Paul George on like the Mitchell was like trying to hedge, trying to blitz, trying to something, a small pick and roll, and just Olayed him, and Paul George splits it, comes straight down the lane. Like, okay, so Gobert is guarding man, so he has got to come off the, stop Paul George at the rim, sprint back out to the corner, and then try to contain that ball. Like, okay, that's you're asking your big to do that. And but okay, well, why can't he do that? Okay, you're right. You should have a small in the game and just let Paul George come down to the lane and dunk there. Like, you know, that's not the breakdown. There is nothing Rudy Gobert did. It's couldn't contain the ball because Mitchell's hurt and also not a great defender.
Yeah, and you know, this is the thing. Like, it kind of goes back to Giannis should be guarding KD. Like, that's not this isn't the thing here. Like, what makes
it's not NBA defense is not guard your guy.
No, it's so much more, right? And it's all about your rotations. Where are you at? And it's a five man thing. Right. And you're only as good as your weakest defender, because when that guy gives up penetration, you're in trouble and it puts you in rotation. And I think that's the thing that people are losing sight of in all of these questions in terms of defense. And like, why isn't this happening? Why isn't that happening? Granted, I was screaming, why isn't Kawhi guarding Luka in the first round? But I think that one made a little bit more sense than what we're talking about here, because Kawhi could actually guard Luka, whereas in other instances, I don't think it's a great example.
And that's at least like a strategic kind of, okay, we have other guys who kind of can, and as the series goes on, we'll do that.
Right.
Because that's like, anyway. Yeah, no, and The Gobert discussion in particular is just, I don't want
to. It's center defense generally. You know, I don't think I make no secret about how I feel most people, you know, at least their competency level when it comes to looking at basketball defense generally. But in particular, nobody knows how to talk about big man defense in the modern NBA. And well, to be fair, there are people that do. Mo DeKeel is one of them. Right.
I mean, I think there's a little bit of a rule of thumb is if like the ball handler is like coming downhill at the center without like a defender on his hip, it's probably not the center who screwed up.
Somebody messed up.
Yeah. Like, so, well, you know, someone died on a screen. Someone didn't get over. Someone didn't switch. Right.
Well, it's called the last line of defense. Right. Because it is the last line of defense. The rest of the defense has been broken down. And this is why Rudy Gobert is so damn good. Because that 90% of the time, when he's the last line of defense,
that's
the best guy you can get.
There's a reason why most dunks in the half court, most posters in the half court are on centers. It's because they're the ones that are rotating over. It's not their fault. They're even getting dunked on. They are doing their job. You know, it's the guy that screwed up before them and all that. We can go on for hours on that. I'm sure we will.
Feels like one of those like chicken soup for the center's soul. And we're going to have to write that book. Okay.
We've had a busy few days.
All right. I'm scared to like leave my house. I went on a run and I started getting texts from you guys. I was like, are you seeing this? No, because I'm running. And so I, you know. Respond. What's happening? Everything. Okay. So let's start with the Pelicans and we'll get to the Mavericks. Let's start with the Pelicans. Stan Van Gundy is out after one season. Look, this is a rough year on everybody. I don't even know how you can judge the job anyone did, but by any standards, New Orleans underperformed, but also to me, it kind of feels like a wasted year of development, in particular Zion, because that's the only thing that really matters for the New Orleans Pelicans this season to me. So, you know, it's a bummer. Stan Van Gundy, like, likable guy, great on television, pretty good coach, not working out. I guess let's start there, and then we'll get into some of the other stuff that's come out since. Mo, I mean, you can't argue that the performance was great. You can't do that.
No, but some of that, too, is you got to also look at roster construction and what you're trying to create, you know, and how you're trying to build. I mean, it wasn't a great year. Let's just be honest. At the end of the day, everything that happened with the Pelicans, just didn't really work in that sense. And look, I understand it. Okay, hey, he didn't vibe with the young guys. Like, let's just call it what it is. And all right, they want to go another way before. It's kind of smart a little bit to the degree of like, all right, we screwed up with this hire. Let's get out of it quickly and go to the next and try to fix it as quickly as possible. But some of it too is like, I don't know if you gave him as much of a chance as you could, considering this was a year with very little practice time, very little training camp, and all of this. This was a tough year for any coach who took over the job for the first time on this team kind of deal.
And they traded their best player right before the season.
Oh, yeah, I forgot that.
Yeah. And by the way, would you say that that's a roster that all fit together perfectly? No. I wouldn't.
No.
So this is not about performance, right? Like, I mean, I think it's pretty safe to say that even though the performance was poor, that this is not about performance. There's more to it.
No. And there's an interesting parallel because you're talking about like he didn't vibe with the young guys. But Tom Thibodeau vibed to the young guys well enough to get coach of the year. And I think this is a really, I mean, it's an interesting thing about how starting a season, like, okay, the coach is on us. He's demanding all this blah, blah, blah. We start the year 6-1. And then it's just like, man, yeah, let's do this. Now, I don't know if that would have fixed everything in New Orleans, but it makes it a little easier. And where, like, you know, Tibbs is jumping on people like he does in New York, and they start the season really well. And, you know, their defense is working because their Jedi defense was working. And then it's like, oh yeah, coach knows what he's doing about defense. Let's buy in. And it's just, that's natural, but it's just, that's a sort of a sliding doors thing about like the shots go in or they don't. And that like determines everything that comes after.
The one big difference in this, and we talk about this a lot, is you can tell Tibbs has the backing of the organization. The players could have gone and complained to Leon Rose, and he would have just been like, nope, not here to hear this. You know, I'll listen to you, but that's about all you're going to get from me. And I think that's kind of the difference in that instance, right? And the ties we've known, you know, with Leon and Tibbs and all of that. So that makes a big difference in all of that. It's and you're right, Seth. Like, right, if they start out 6-1, it's a different deal. Guys are more energized and things like that. It never worked out. But I think also the Griff has got to take some of the blame to it. As Dave was saying, this roster never made sense. And then when you stumbled on, hey, the way we should play offensively is Zion should be our main ball handler, you're in a situation where it's like, okay, now this team really doesn't make sense. Right. Cause like Eric Bledsoe's not a guy I want to kick the ball out to for a three. You know, you have weird kind of guys out there that doesn't quite fit. And now it's going to be a very interesting 2 years, I think, for the Pelicans trying to figure out how they're going to play going forward and build that roster going with it.
Did we talk about the Brandon Ingram thing last summer?
Probably, but we can talk about it again.
Here, like, yeah,
rehash it.
I don't think you can't build a team. You cannot build a champ. It's very difficult to build a championship level team with Brandon Ingram and Zion Williamson as your two guys. Not that each of them individually couldn't be cogs or important, like top, you know, in Zion's case, top guy, in Ingram's case, top two guy in that. But as those two guys together, they make no sense. And this was eminently predictable. Because, you know, unless Zion can play the five defensively, which
absolutely not
seems no, we've seen very little evidence of it. And it's sometimes guys can overlap and it works, but like the situations where that, you know, the minimum standard for that working is like, okay, Paul George and Kawhi kind of overlap. but they're Paul George and Kawhi. And like the sort of this, the maxi version of that is like LeBron and Dwayne Wade, right? These guys aren't that. And yeah, you know, Zion might be that, but do we really ever think that Brandon Ingram is going to be that? And you're committed to those two guys as your, you know, your big chunk of cap space max guys? Doesn't make any sense.
Yeah. And they're kind of stuck. You know, they traded for Steven Adams and he got an extension.
I mean, there
are, although it's probably tradable. I mean, every contract's tradable, but it's extra work.
I think Steven Adams and Zion can work together.
They rebound like crazy.
Yeah.
Well, no, Steven Adams rebounds like crazy. Zion okay, doesn't defensively. Right. Let's just be honest. I mean, no, sure. If we're going to talk about
you're
it.
Right. Zion, no, you're right. Defensively, he doesn't. Yeah,
offensive
you're right.
Rebound, he crashes the board. Defensively, it's like Amber chilling. That's why you need a guy like Steven Adams and that regard. So I kind of understand that, even though I didn't at the time, but watching it, I'm like, okay, yeah, no, makes sense. I just think they got to figure out their guards. If going forward and they got to figure out what they want from their coach, right? They're going to need a creative offensive mind. They're going to need a guy that offensively can come up with some interesting stuff, because Zion's a unique player. So you can't just come in and run the same stuff you normally run. Like, you got to get a little more creativity in that. And you're going to need somebody that can hold these guys accountable. And the front office has to back them to allow them to hold them accountable, because there's going to be defensive mistakes. But you got to be able to get on those guys when they have them.
If we're talking about coaches that know how to do stuff, is this a good time to move to the Dallas Mavericks?
Oh, boy.
So, quite a bit happening for a team that has Luka Doncic on it.
Dave. How many miles are you away from Dallas?
Oh, not that many. I'm about 2 hours.
So, like, as soon as you move near, things go.
I did this to the Spurs. Look, I ruined the Spurs. I killed the Spurs. Kawhi, I moved to San Antonio. Kawhi gets traded. Manu retires. Tony Parker signs with the Charlotte Hornets. I'm a curse.
I forgot that happened.
Yeah, I forgot all about that.
I'm a curse, guys.
Okay, continue on. So,
yeah. Mavs fans, I really apologize for this. But here's my thing. The power structure there had mostly been in place for a really long time, right? Rick Carlisle had been there since 2008. Donnie Nelson Jr. had been there since 1999. Haralabob Fulgaris has only been there the last couple of years. This power struggle, which, by the way, I'm sure you have by now, but if you haven't read Tim Cato's story on it, it's some fantastic reporting. I don't just say that because I love Tim Cato. It really is excellent reporting. And it came out before all of this stuff happened. It's a mess, plain and simple, right? Like, this team at this stage shouldn't be having a complete overhaul like this. This season wasn't awful for them. I mean, you know, everyone went through a really challenging year, and there were a lot of positives for the Mavericks. There's some negatives, but there were a lot of positives, I thought.
No, I mean, like, you just look at it, it's just looking forward. Where are you going when you look at this team, and how are you going to build next to Luka, you know, and those things. And listen, they took a gamble on Porzingis, and unfortunately they owe him a crap ton of money for the next 3 years. And you're paying a very high-level role player second option money now. Now you're in a tough spot, you know. To trade him, you're going to have to give up an asset or take somebody else's problem. It's along those lines where it gets challenging in that stuff. But the organization has kind of – it's weird. It crumbled in 3 days. You know, maybe it was beginning to crumble before, but publicly it happened very quickly.
Now, the basketball decisions, though, I mean, Mark Cuban was making those anyway, right? Like, this is just the people who are around him influencing those decisions. This is, you know, my reading of the situation here. I don't know. I wouldn't want to be in the position of having to now pull this all together at this point, would you?
You know, I'm going to, you know, as sort of entertaining as this has been, kind of in, you know, we make the second round of the play, but nobody will care.
Yeah.
It's embarrassing in the moment, and we move on. Like, remember, like, you know, it's a completely different situation, but remember how, like, People, oh my God, no free agent is ever going to sign in Philadelphia because of what Sam Hinkie did.
Right.
And then as soon as they got decent, like nobody cared. So it's
I think people are going to want to play with Luka for sure. I don't think that's going to be any kind of a concern. Yeah.
It's not good that it, you know, things shook out this way or anything, but it's okay. Things are done. Move on. We'll see what happens next. Now, the issue is probably more what you just said, that Mark Cuban is making all the basketball decisions. And ultimately, the owner, obviously, or the franchise, governor, whatever
we're calling him.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, that's like, obviously, it's their money. So they, you know, at some level get to. But in terms of like, it is a more than full-time job to do it. And with all due respect, it's not something that most owners do full-time.
Yeah, no. And here's the thing, though. Like, I kind of understand it. And it's worked for them in the past and how it goes. Because it's all about letting the guys underneath you do their jobs, right? And Donnie Nelson's a guy you trust infinitely, right? Like, in the same way with the Spurs, it's like, hey, when it was RC and Pop, Pop trust RC. It wasn't a question, you know, and allowed him to help make those decisions. I think it's just comes down to you have a lot of infighting in the organization right now, and you got to kind of just everybody's got to.
Not anymore.
Well, yeah, not anymore. But you did. And
like all the family business was settled in the last couple days.
Yeah, no, clearly, and it's a matter now of figuring out, you know, how we're gonna do things, because the thing is. It's weird if it's just one person whispering in Cuban's ears, right? Like the ideal scenario is like he has his core group of guys. I'm going to listen to these guys and then I'll make a decision. If he's just listening to just one guy, it becomes a very big problem, I think.
And by the way, like it became very public in Dallas, but this is no way unique.
All over the place.
To Dallas. Yeah. There's a lot of places where decisions get made because someone is whispering in the owner's ear. It's like, oh, this guy. And like, as some, you know, if you're working in basketball ops and that stuff kind of goes, like, all
right. Yeah.
So
didn't the Lakers have a, like, Dr. Buss's bartender as a scout.
Oh yeah, no, the Jim Buss era is a different story. Yeah. That was.
I know. I mean, I'm just saying. Listen, there are characters throughout, and all sorts of people wield influence in all sorts of places. So it's nothing weird.
What you would ideally want in your front office is, you know, the scenario is like, I want to hear everybody out, but when I make the decision, everybody toes the line. It's not, and no hurt feelings in terms of, well, he didn't go with what I said, so now it's. There's going to be an animosity, or I can't believe he listened to this. It's like, heard everybody out. Now I go with it. Move on.
All right. Let's talk Carlisle quickly. I mean, as a championship coach, there's not a lot of those on the market every year. Carlisle, would he be like the best retread available?
He's the best option out there, period. Like there's not another Seth's making a face, so maybe he doesn't like it. But like,
It depends on the situation, probably.
It's a very particular team, like you know.
Well, I mean, I'm not talking about not sending him to Orlando to rebuild.
Sure, you know, yeah, I mean, yeah, like, yeah, but, exactly. Like the Celtics, for instance. The Celtics, I think Portland. You know, I don't that's think the a team. Celtics Milwaukee, are an option. If they make a change,
I'm going to tell you why I don't think the Celtics are an option. I don't think he's going to want to go and play under Brad Stevens when he has more experience and success than Brad Stevens. Like, that doesn't matter. I would almost think it would have made more sense for him to go and be the team president and Brad Stevens to be the coach.
To be the coach,
Than the other way around.
That's going to be an interesting thing because you think that part of this is like it really seems that Brad just didn't like the coaching grind. And so if he's able to I'm doing basketball, but I'm doing this part of basketball. Like, you know, there have been coaches who have like made that transition. Like Lawrence Frank has been
Danny Ainge.
If you're Rick Carlisle, you know, like I'm assuming you're going to maybe if he did go to a situation like Boston, he would have a seat at the table. You know, on making those decisions and stuff. And maybe that's a partnership that would work out.
Always has a seat at the table.
But I'm with Mo. I get it. You know,
What's how that? Big is the seat?
How big is the seat? Right?
Well, though the seat has the lever where it goes up and down. Sometimes it's bigger and sometimes it's
But if you're, I mean, if you've got Brad Stevens as the Pobo and you're Rick Carlisle with this resume and you're coming in, I think I'm with Mo there. But also, I don't know if the Celtics are a good enough team. If you're Rick Carlisle, you probably are going to be able to choose between a couple of different situations.
They got a couple of things to fix. But let me just be honest with you. Every team that's going to be potentially open for the most part all has some sort of issue with it. You know, you talk about Portland. You also got to remember that Terry Stotts was Rick Carlisle's guy. Is he going to want to go replace him? Now, we've seen it. Ty Lue took over for Doc Rivers. That's a, you know, kind of deal. Like, that happens all the time in coaching. But it's going to be interesting to see where he goes. And we got to see what happens with Milwaukee, because I think ultimately that's the big thing. You know, depending how game seven goes, might be a new opening, and that's going to be the first one probably filled, because that's the one I think Rick Carlisle is going to go for.
Wow. Well, both so far with both the New Orleans and the Dallas jobs, the names that I'm hearing are new coaches. You guys have any thoughts on that? I mean, like, for the Mavericks in particular, I think it's a little bit weird to do a first-time coach, but I need to see, you know, who is it, and then what does the staff look like? Because we said the same thing about Nash. What is this going to be? What kind of coach is he going to be? And then they get Mike D'Antoni, and they kept Jacques Vaughn, and all of a sudden it's like, oh, well, I have a lot less to worry about there.
By the way, can we give Steve Nash some
great job this year?
Doing a great job.
I have to apologize. I have a lot of the
emotional intelligence stuff. You know, I will say this, man. It is as a guy who has hugged players coming out of the game. I love the way that he is interacting with his guys. You know, I mean, Kevin Durant put that team on his back, and you can even see Kevin Durant couldn't even hug him back at the end of that game. I mean, I loved everything about that. They got. All right, the Brooklyn Nets somehow have great vibes.
No, they got great chemistry. They have good chemistry as a team. You know, they need more time together to figure out the on the court stuff, but the off court stuff they have good chemistry. I just want to touch on one thing, Dave, because one name that is being mentioned for the Dallas job, Jamal Mosley, he's been an assistant there for a long time. To me, that's even though it is a first time head coach, it's also a guy that's been there for a very long time, has good relationships with Luka, has the institutional knowledge. So granted, there is some stuff he's going to have to learn as a head coach, but I feel more comfortable with that than bringing in a first-time head coach with somebody who has known nothing of the organization. And
yeah, he'd walk in with locker room equity.
Yeah.
Right. And that's important.
And I think for me, that's kind of the thing. And that's kind of why I actually don't mind if Carl Lawson gets the job in Boston, having been with Boston before she went to Duke. Like, I again, it's along those lines. I think that makes sense.
Carl Lawson also, by the way, from the DMV. So, you know, maybe the Wizards should put a call in to Carl Lawson.
Dave, do you want to tell the listeners about your sort of connection to Carol Lawson?
My wife played AAU basketball with Carol Lawson. I guess they live near each other. So Carol Lawson was a super athlete, though. My wife is an okay athlete. The girls high school basketball team that I coached in Arizona, they always loved when my wife would come because doesn't pass. She's a ball hog. And she would routinely, in her mid-30s, put up like 25 in a scrimmage against these poor high school girls who didn't know how to play basketball. Ruthless, man. You guys got any closing thoughts? It's been a weird week, man. Like, the basketball has been up and down, but with some really amazing performances. But, man, like, the news just won't stop.
I'm just waiting to see what the next news drop is going to be. It seems like never ending. I don't know. We haven't even gotten into player demands yet for trades, which you got to imagine that's coming somewhere in the next few weeks. Yeah. There needs to be at least one. We need a cherry on the top of all of this.
So who do you, the weird thing is there's the two series that are 3-2. And I think that you could really make a pretty strong case for the two to win both of them.
Yeah, well, mm-hmm. I think when you look at – my thing is when you look at Utah, and David mentioned it, like we don't even know if Connolly and Mitchell are going to play. Yeah. So that becomes a different scenario. Yeah. I'm just going to be honest, man. I got no faith in Philly. None. Yeah, I don't think either. They have the mental toughness. You can see it.
Well, that's the thing.
When things go wrong, they don't find a way to right the ship. They find a way to just – let's pour more gasoline on it. Let's light this puppy even. Let's get the flames all the way to the moon. Like, it's that level of stuff.
There's one solution that the Sixers need to think about. Okay?
Paul Reed.
Wrap up. But wrap up Danny Green's leg and get him out there. They're missing Danny Green. That's the
thing. He was doing so well when he had both legs going.
They need the steadying hand of the always reliable.
Okay, no. So, I did want to ask. Like, who do you guys think? Like, let's embarrass ourselves and make some predictions. No.
I think I do that plenty. I've been so bad.
I've had to pick every game of this playoffs individually. On the Athletic.
Don't blame me. That's your job. Why I got to do it now? That's your job.
I have recorded votes is what I'm saying. All right. So I would like you to share in the anxiety.
Well, I've already said Philly's not going to do it.
Yeah. Okay. I'm with the Hawks too, because I just trust those guys to be, if Philly comes out and punches them in the mouth, I just think that the Hawks will punch back. And I don't know that Philly will respond to the counterpunch because I haven't seen it.
Listen, I'm picking Atlanta, even if it goes seven. I think Atlanta would even win a game seven in Atlanta. Sorry, Philly fans. I'm just
– In Philly.
In Philly. Same thing. Wherever the hell.
Trae Young, man, becoming a legend right in front of our eyes.
You know, and I think it's more because Philly and not Atlanta. I think it's Philly's issues, everything we talked about. I think I'm going to go bold. I think the Clippers close it out tomorrow night or tonight.
Yeah, I think so too.
Listen to it.
I think the Clippers figured it out. Bucks, Nets, man. God, it's so tough. Because, you know, the minutes load on Durant is an issue. Harden, obviously, with the hamstring is an issue. And the Bucks just should be able to windshield him.
I kind of think that tonight was as much about like sort of the emotional exhaustion as it was the physical, and that's not going to be an issue going into a game seven.
I'll say this, Durant's played over 40 minutes in every game but one, and I'm beginning to get concerned because he did look and you're right, some of it's emotional, some of it's freaking physical, like a lot of the shots were short.
I don't like it, but I'm doing this, the Bucks, I closed my eyes and just
you know, did it.
Kevin Durant has just been so much fun to watch in the playoffs, man. Like, I miss that guy. I'm so glad that he's on this run. This is so great.
I'm taking the Bucks.
So I'm gonna go the other way. I think it's gonna be Clippers. Hawks.
Wait.
Nets.
Clippers, Hawks,
Clippers,
Nets.
Hawks, Nets. Nets. Yeah. Gotcha. That's,
you picked everything, but the Nets is us. It's the only place where we're different.
Yeah.
Great. So we can laugh at you next
now,
week
before we're right. The funny thing is like the second most likely outcome is Philly wins the next two games by a combined 70 points.
I don't trust them too. Like, I don't trust them.
No, I don't.
That's actually the only way I trust them to win it. I don't trust them to win anything close.
I can't, man. We're just rambling at this point, Dave.
We're done. Guys, that's it for this week. And I hope you guys have been enjoying the playoffs as much as we have. Because we don't normally record this late, but we wanted to wait because these games are just, they're loaded and it's fun. And I mean, it's great. So
I think we understand why we don't usually record.
We're a little punch drunk.
You made it this far, by the way, folks. Congrats. Have a shot. Good luck.
Anyway, for Seth and Mo, I'm Dave. Thank you guys for listening to the Athletic NBA Show. We'll be back next week with another episode of Nerder, She Wrote.
Hey,
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.